How bad is it if the trade gap gets, quote-unquote, worse? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Relevant to the multi-front trade war is news this morning that the difference between what America imported versus what we exported grew by more than expected last month, up more than 6% to $72.2 billion. Let's turn to Mark Lucchini, Chief Investment Strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
All right, so the trade deficit got a little bit wider from the president's perspective, a little bit worse in July, $72.2 billion when you look at goods coming across borders. Do you think any of that is goods coming in under the wire with tariffs?
I can't help but think it's a contributing factor. In addition to that, though, of course, is the strength of the U.S. economy and the consumer within the economy that is buying at an elevated pace. And as a consequence, obviously consuming more goods in general, the dominant portion of which, of course, is coming in from overseas markets.
Coming in from overseas markets, hence widening the trade deficit. But we do have, when it comes to the stock market, it seems to have been buoyed by this draft agreement between the U.S. and Mexico, even though Congress hasn't signed off, even though we don't have details of the actual agreement, and even though we have to figure out what Canada is going to do.
Well, absolutely. Any time that you have something that had been lurking out there that had some uncertainty associated with it, that's encouraging, and market participants have clearly bid on it. The one that continues to lurk out there, which is the elephant in the room, of course, is China at the end of the day. But the sequencing, at least, for investors, Mexico, Canada, and then ultimately China, will improve the market participants' views around an issue that continues to, I think, lurk over the market and really suffocated equities for the better part of summer.
All right. If we continue on the path, that's an if. Mark Lucchini, Chief Investment Strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Toyota is investing $500 million in a joint project with the car service Uber. They're aiming to build a fleet of self-driving minivans that you could call with a smartphone. The target date is soon, the year 2021, which is when incoming freshmen are juniors. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is on the line here.
Toyota is throwing Uber a lifeline just months after a fatal crash in Arizona involving one of Uber's autonomous vehicles. The new fleet of self-driving cars will be based on Toyota's Sienna minivan. Gerald Myers is a business professor at the University of Michigan. He says Toyota is taking a chance on an unproven technology.
Well, I think the whole idea and the technology are new, that only a company the size of Toyota and with the reach of Toyota could afford to take a chance on doing even what they're doing now.
Uber closed its autonomous vehicle operations in Arizona after the accident. It's taken its self-driving vehicles off the roads of San Francisco, Pittsburgh, and Toronto. Uber hasn't said yet when those test vehicles will be back on the road. General Motors placed a similar $500 million bet on self-driving cars 2 years ago with Uber rival Lyft. But in June, GM's president stepped down from the Lyft board, and GM CEO Mary Barra said there weren't any active projects with Lyft.
Nancy, thank you.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
It's primary election day in Florida, Arizona, and Oklahoma. Around the country, nearly half the primary candidates will be first-timers, just one hallmark of this election season. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams went to Delaware, which holds its primary next week, to talk to one candidate about building a campaign staff during what economists see as a time of full employment.
Delaware hasn't sent a Republican to the Senate since 2001, so for Democratic hopefuls, the primary may as well be the election. That means you need to be staffed up, election style, earlier than usual. I met up with first-time candidate Carrie Evelyn Harris in July, just as she and her expanding team were moving into new headquarters in a small office building near downtown Wilmington.
So it's $1,000 a month, and they want it 2 months at a time, so not bad, right?
Renting month to month is probably a smart move in a race as tough as this one. Harris is challenging three-term incumbent Tom Carper. He's raised more than $3 million. She's brought in just under $47,000. Plus, Harris acknowledges she's not your typical Senate candidate.
I always make the joke I'm a lot of otherness, right?
She's biracial and openly gay, just one of many non-traditional candidates hoping to get to Washington. She's also a community organizer, which gave her a big network to tap for staff, like volunteer coordinator Kirsten Walther.
I have been there since the first meeting back in January.
How many of you were there back then?
About six of us, six or seven.
They helped get the campaign off the ground. Now, Walther is one of about a dozen people buzzing about the new offices, hanging posters and stacking campaign literature. Volunteers are crucial to a campaign, and Harris has more than 500 of them. But you also need experienced staffers who might like to be paid.
This is my first week on the campaign.
Vanessa Clifford is Harris's deputy campaign manager, and she knows how to rally a crowd.
When I say Della, you say where? Della.
Where?
Della.
Where?
Clifford is on loan to the Harris campaign from the Working Families Party. Other staff have come courtesy of Justice Democrats, the group that assisted Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in her surprise primary win in New York. Staff like Deputy Field Director Bilal Tahir. He says Delaware is refreshingly different.
A lot of parts in New York City, people don't open doors, period. Here, they will actually have a conversation with you.
Harris says merging longtime staff with new arrivals can be a challenge.
The good thing is we're all organizers, so we're used to working with random people.
And in the end, you're just glad to have them. In Wilmington, Delaware, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
And President Trump asserted today that Google search results are rigged to the left and suppress good news about him. The president didn't say where he's getting this, but has vowed to take unspecified action. Google stock is down 0.5%. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.